your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make to have in the middle of it. Rest make to have in the middle. We are. Rest make to have in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. I'm reporting along with one of my colleagues, Randall Mock from Dallas, Texas. And we're attending the JFK conference. And it's about the JFK assassination, which occurred November 22nd. 1963 in Dallas, Texas, and Dealey Plaza was the site of the assassination. That's for my listening audience that was not even born before that date. And there's probably more than the older group. But anyway, we're up here, and we've run into a group of people, speakers, that is phenomenal. John B. Wells, who has Caravan to Midnight in Dallas here, is the master of ceremonies, and boy, he's really, really doing a great, great work. Gary Fannin is here. The Innocence of Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald, is his book. Jim Mars, Crossfire, he written a fine book on it. We have Ollie Damgaard coming in from Europe. He was born in Denmark, was raised in Sweden, and ended up living most of the time in Spain at this time. He's out of Spain. He's written several books on the JFK assassination. Today is Saturday, and this evening there's going to be a speaker's dinner. They're going to present some awards and so forth. Abraham Bolton, he's going to receive the Justice for JFK Kennedy Award, okay, via Dr. James Fetzer. And Dr. James Fetzer, okay, going to be coming in, I think, in, well, they say filmed here, so don't know for sure if Jim is going to make it here in person or not. But those are some of the people and some of the activities tonight, okay? Tomorrow, there's a whole slew of also old Wayne Mattson, okay? He's a former NSA official. He's going to be here. Barb McClellan. This is Carol McClellan's first husband. And he was with the LBJ law firm, and he'll have some important things to say. Roger Stone, the man that really helped Trump get into the White House, is here, and he'll be speaking. He's written a book on the JFK assassination. There'll be book signings here tomorrow, so if you're in the Dallas area and you're listening to this broadcast, well, come on down and enjoy a slew of very, very well-educated, well-informed JFK researchers. Vince Palomaro, I've interviewed him before. He is an expert on Secret Service procedures. And he says in his book and interviews that I've done, he'll be speaking Sunday also, that there were very few of the Secret Service protocols and procedures for securing the security and providing security for the presidents was followed. Go in to the JFKconference.com for more information. Okay, we've had just a tremendous week here. This is our second weekend after the election, and we're still having a lot of problems on the Democratic side. We've got a lot of hurt people out there. So the question that my colleague up here raised on the way up We had about 3 hours to talk about different things. Was how are we going to reach out and heal people that are very, very hurt? See, and I think it's well intentioned, and I don't think it's made up. I don't think it's contrived. I think there is a hurt there. There's a great disappointment that the supporters of Hillary did not win, you know, election for her, or she did not go in. There are reports that she was really upset that night of the election and was physically restrained. I don't know if that is absolutely the fact or not, but the point that was raised in my mind, that if it's true that she was physically restrained, then it would have to be the Secret Service that restrained her, because they're there to protect her night and day, being a former First Lady, see, and having Secret Service protection, see. So that would be an interesting aspect of this, is that if she really was inebriated and got out of control, then and they physically restrained her, it would have to be the Secret Service. Other things that occurred this week is that Pence attended, the vice president-elect, attended a musical in downtown New York. And it's entitled Hamilton, and it's based on Alexander Hamilton's life. And at that show that night, they booed him. There were some boos that started, and it got to be a chorus of boos, and it was pretty insulting, I'm sure. But this shows how sensitive some of the people, the Democratic supporters for Hillary are. And many of your artistic people that are on the music side and theater side and Hollywood and so far like that, that are into entertainment industry, I believe a lot of those were Hillary Clinton supporters. So it's not out of the ordinary that they might, you know, cause an incident there at the musical or something. But anyway, Trump is not acting like the president-elect. He's acting like he's already in office, it looks like to me. It looks like that he's actually taking a leadership right out of Obama's hands. Obama met just this weekend with Merkel, Chancellor Merkel over in Germany. And it shows him sitting at a table talking. And then he makes speeches and pronouncements concerning the activities and the violence displayed in different cities because of the reaction to the Clinton loss, that he said, well, they can't be silent, see. And then, you know, one of the things also that has really interested me and gotten my interest up is that we've got this concept all of a sudden called fake news. Where did that come from? I think it came from the mainline press and media trying to get rid of the alternative press and media. And this concept, there was a lady that was interviewed that was a Democratic analyst or strategist or something, and she's there's a libertarian there, and they're on one of these Fox talk shows, and they argue back and forth and so forth. There's a site called FakeNewsWatch.com. If you go in there, you see Alex in there and Drudge Report and similar. listed companies like that. Of course, I haven't shown up on there yet. I'm just small fry, you know. But anyway, and, you know, if I show up on there or not, I could care less about fake news. I put up on Facebook a little quote about it today, and I was saying fake news, okay, is against the tyrannical New World Order, and that's what I believe. I think if you go in and you start analyzing that concept, fake news, you're going to find some of the biggest players in the world behind it, some of the biggest media giants behind there, offering this new concept that's supposed to be so eye-opening and wake us up and teach us so many wonderful things. And it's fake news. It's just a fake. It's a fake, all right, like you do in football, where you swerve your hips, you know, and then you go the other way, you know. Well, I think this is going to fall on its face. I see it as a really crude mechanism of going nowhere, you know. But anyway, that's out there in the news today. They have a site. There was an incident this morning on Alex Jones's site. It was reported by Alex Jones's InfoWars that someone brandished a weapon in his presence when he was with his family somewhere out to eat in a restaurant, I think Saturday morning. So we don't have any further details of that, but we do want to make that to take a note of that, and because it's you know, it's like Trump, you know, there are allegations that this that there were, you know, threats against his life earlier during the campaign, and some of those may have been truthful and legitimate threats, but don't know for sure. Otherwise, we're seeing a group of men run in around Trump that are being offered as possibilities for his administration. Well, it just so happens that many of the people that are being considered or are on the periphery of consideration are Goldman Sachs connected. And a big banker out of New York, very powerful. They put in a successive number of New York Fed presidents and so forth. And so they're very powerful. They show up at the Bilderberg Group in force. I've seen as many as six people from the Goldman Sachs organizations there. Now, what's interesting about this last Bilderberg meeting in Dresden is that there were only like no Goldman Sachs people there, you know. So I don't know how that happened. Usually they'll have at least three or four or five or six. I've seen up to six Goldman Sachs people from different committees, this international group, the New York group, whatever, London. I've seen it up to about six people. So it's puzzling that not more Goldman Sachs people attended the German Bilderberg meeting. And if those out there are not aware of what the Bilderberg meeting is, it's a meeting of some of the most powerful people in the world. And some are kings and queens meet there. And, heads of like the Bank of England and MI6. These people are very powerful. The commander of Europe there, U.S. Armed Forces Europe, was there also. So they all get there and they talk strategy about how to manage the world, see. And their ultimate, you talk about money people. These are at the top, of the list. Now getting back to Trump, there's one thing that I haven't looked at yet, and I think his intentions are well, and I think his heart is pure on what he wants to do. But I'm a little hesitant and I'm a little pessimistic about what I see them doing to him at this time. And I think he's going to have to be very wary of keeping out of his administration some of these old, true, transnational, internationalist, globalist type people, see. And I'm thinking they're creeping them in on him, see. And there's so many people, I'll give you an example of some of the connections that I see that are very interesting. One man that stood up from Silicon Valley that supported him was the name of Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel is a very interesting person in the sense that he's German, but he comes into California and makes a fortune founding PayPal. And PayPal was a resounding success that made him hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in profit when he sold it. Then he took the proceeds and the profits that he made from the sale of PayPal and he started reinvesting in a number of high-tech companies, okay? Well, one of the companies that he founded along with some CIA seed money was Palantir, okay? Now, the company Palantir was named after an item, an object in Lord of the Rings. If you go in and you look at Lord of the Rings, those stories, you're going to see the word Palantir appear. And Palantir is a seeing stone, okay? And supposedly, these seeing stones, you could look into the stone. It's like a crystal ball, but just a different name. But you could look into the future, or you could look into the past. You could look at two remote locations and so forth. So we're looking at this Palantir, which was established with CIA seed money, that one of the biggest founding members and still one of the largest holders of stock in it is Peter Thiel. Now, he comes in and gives a speech at the National Convention of the Republican Party, but also he has contributed heavily to investment funds run by Josh Kirshner. Now, Josh Kirshner is Jared Kirshner's brother. And Jared Kirshner is married to Ivanka Trump Kirshner. And so he's going to be considered on the National Security Council. So we're seeing that, and also what's interesting about this is Josh Kirshner at one time worked for Goldman Sachs for a short period. So we have that connection. We have Bannon, who was the chief strategist during the campaign for Trump. That's a former Goldman Sachs employee, and was making deals with Goldman Sachs as recently as the early teens, 2011 or so, right in there. So we have Bannon, who is going to be his chief strategist, Goldman Sachs. His son-in-law's brother was a former Goldman Sachs. It's been reported that he's been considering Steve Mnuchin as a Treasury Secretary, and he's Goldman Sachs. But one thing about Mnuchin is that his father was with Goldman Sachs for 30 years and was a general partner of Goldman Sachs. But Mnuchin himself was with them 17 years, and then he went into a series of different investments and so forth. And I think he's Hollywood connected to a large extent, too. So he's not only Goldman Sachs in the early stages of his career, but later on he ties into producing many of the movies out of Hollywood. Okay, so those are some of the names that begin to crop up. Now, Peter Thiel also is connected to Josh Kirshner through there's a series of Thrive investment vehicles, Thrive 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so forth. And I believe that Peter Thiel has invested in one or more of these Thrive investment funds. And these Thrive investment funds are concentrating on IT stuff, high-tech stuff. And so that's what we're seeing. Thiel is tied in then to Josh Kirshner, who is the brother of Jared Kushner, who's married to Yvonne Trump. So, I mean, these are some of they're circling the wagons on Trump is what they're doing. But, you know, I think Trump is smarter than some of these people. I see the strategy that he's bringing into the administration initially, some of the people that were adamantly against him, okay, during the campaign, to defuse them of being continued enemies. See what I mean? And so I think it's pretty good strategy, unless these people start catching on to what's going on. See, later on he could get rid of some of these people if they don't quite toe the line or carry out some of his, wishes. See, so that's going to be interesting in the future as to what will occur and how it will occur in the Trump administration. But for all intents and purposes, he is an acting, I guess the word acting president of the United States would almost be a way to describe the way Trump is conducting. He's beginning to almost administer and set policies for the United States without being inaugurated yet. See, now what I see on his opposing side is that they keep running these mechanisms against him, and so the Alinsky model that Hillary Clinton wrote about for her theme for partial completion of her bachelor's degree at Wellesley College. There is only the fight with the title of that paper. And it was based on an analysis of the Saul Alinsky model, okay? So that is indicative of the way I think that she carried out her campaign against Trump. So it's going to be interesting to see how this how they continue to use this Democratic left or liberal left to use as a phalanx attack dog against Trump's upcoming administration. And just what's indicative of it is like this thing at Hollywood, Broadway the other night when Pence was booed at the Hamilton musical. That's just been reported recently. So that's another startling revelation. And so we don't know all the time how they're going to continue to destroy his administration, but we've got to. They don't want to give him a chance at all. They hate him, and I'll tell you why the liberal left, the Democratic left, or whatever, hate Trump, is that I went back and I was down at the Texas Book Fair recently held in Austin, Texas, and I had occasion to record on video David K. Johnston, who wrote The Coming of Trump, okay? The Making of Trump, excuse me. And it was a biography of Donald John Trump. That's his real name, is Donald John Trump. They always say Donald J. Trump, but the middle name is John. But anyway, he got up there, and I read, there was about 500 liberal Democrats, I would say, in that tent. It was a C-SPAN tent, so it was being broadcast live on C-SPAN at that time. And then, of course, you can go in to the archives and you can review that that program. And I think even Smith was interviewing him, see. But it was, and I've said this, I think I reported this recently, maybe as recently as last week also. But it deserves to be repeated because they had a hate fiesta in that tent for Trump. Now, these people, they disregarded all of Hillary's problems whatsoever. And she had so many, especially WikiLeaks put out there that she was pay for play out of the State Department and all kinds of different problems that she's had over the years. But there they are, you know, with this great biographer, Johnston, and they're laughing at when he makes all of these accusations and, you know, pronouncements about, you know, con man and, you know what I mean, racist and, oh, they're just laughing up a storm, see. But what they must do is that when you, my dad used to tell me, he said, when you point a finger at somebody, there's three fingers pointing back, see. And so what we're beginning to see is that we've undergone, the country has undergone a debasement, a debased process of a moral and spiritual debasement. And it's taken decades for it to play through the society and to manifest in broken homes and a falling away from religious practices. And the substitute for formerly traditional religious practices to very, very occult practices. And some of the investigations in New York recently revealed that there may have been at the highest of the Clinton Foundation and involved people around her, there may have been very, very high-level occult practices. So what has happened is that we've had Aldous Huxley come over here years ago. He started setting up ISIS cults and all kinds of New Age stuff on the West Coast. In the 60s, what was interesting is that we had the rise of humanistic psychology, okay? Then it didn't go over that well at the time and it didn't really, was not that popular, you could say, under that name. But when they changed it to the Human Potential Movement, boy, it skyrocketed in popularity, okay? And so as a result, there were a plethora of books, a slew of books written. I'm Okay, You're Okay, the Science of Psycho Cybernetics, and Grow, Think and Grow Rich, and all of these different kinds of books like that. And they were portrayed as human potential type books of self-help. That's a word that I needed to, the Esalen Society, you know what I mean, society, a group out there. And another a man that crops up is that the you had a hierarchy of needs, see, and that came online, see, and you had all these big popular psychologists and so forth, and they started changing, and in addition to this, let me say this, is that Francis Schaeffer, okay, wrote the Christian Manifesto, okay. He was American Presbyterian theology student and graduate and practicer and pastor and minister. But he wound up over in Switzerland, okay? But he wrote extensively on different subjects. And he did not coin the term secular humanism, but he put it out there and made it a public firestorm. And much of your communities, your university and college communities, at the time that he was gaining popularity, they stood up against him. They didn't like him at all. And then you had the closing of the American mind also that came on, came out of Chicago, say. And that wasn't well received either, because the professor there stated basically that they're going away, they're moving away from humanities, the teaching of humanities, into all the other subjects that have no real basis or historical context, see. And so what we have today, it appears to me, is that we have a group of seemingly well-educated students that I don't believe they're well-educated in the overall wide, perspective of the humanities, so to speak. But it's in a very narrow area, and you could boil it down to some very, very political correct subjects, and very judgmental. These people have become, so if it's sort of become a tyranny of political correctness, you know. And I was thinking the other day, I received a book in the mail that I'd ordered, Culture War, see. And I think that's what has been going on, is that we've had a series of culture wars, see. But what it appears today is it's a culture of hate that I see going on out there. And it's not just on the left or the right, it's all across the board, see, is that the two groups that I identified way back, the left and the right, the Democrats and the Republicans, the liberal and the conservatives, they've become more polarized than ever before. And this election showed how polarized they have become. For example, many on the left are saying things like, well, we need the election of the President of the United States based on total vote, the popular vote. And they have come down some strongly against the Electoral College. See? Some of those on the right are saying, hey, wait just a second. Trump actually succeeded because of the Electoral College, and that meant that he had to attract a wider a slew of votes, of a group of votes from more counties and spread out further within those states. And that's really what the Electoral College effectively does, is that it makes it exceedingly more difficult for the population centers to dominate exclusively, see. And so with all their wisdom and so forth, they set that up as a safeguard against these large inner city population centers, which would be able to outvote the rural areas. So that's why I firmly believe in the continuance of your electoral college, based on that, and to give some additional influence to these rural outlying areas. And I just think that is the way to go and to continue. But there are some problems with the Electoral College and the fact that there's approximately 29 states that have some law governing the conduct of those electors. And then there's about 21 states or so, give or take a few, that have no set rules for sure about how those electors are to vote, but historically and traditionally they voted along and they reinforced the majority vote in those particular states is way that it's gone down in the past. There are rumors out that people are approaching some of the Trump family members and wanting to get a pardon to stand down any investigation of Hillary or any prosecution of Hillary once Trump's administration is inaugurated and takes office. So there are rumors out there people are spreading or stating or whatever that there is a group of people that are out there to try to lobby. And I think the other day Jesse Jackson actually put out on the table that Obama should give Hillary a pardon. Now, I researched a little bit on the pardon, and the pardon pardons you against federal laws, but not state laws. See, and also the pardon has an amnesty element to it, also, where if you've committed a crime in the past but were never prosecuted, but it was, say, a federal crime, well, then once that pardon is given to you, anything in the past cannot be used against you to prosecute you. So there is an amnesty element to this pardon, a U.S. pardon. The pardons vary throughout the world in different states. So that would be a very powerful thing for Hillary to end up her career with, see. And Trump, of course, if she ever received a pardon, he couldn't prosecute her for federal crimes. But this New York thing that was opened up because of Huma Abedin and her estranged husband Weiner, Anthony Weiner, on her supposedly laptop or the one they shared together, could lead to some state charges of the people involved, that of evidence that is on that. So we don't know how effective that evidence will be being suppressed, or will it ever make the light of day. We don't really know for sure. We have no absolute answer on that yet. Chris Christie, I think, is out of the running for high office within the Trump administration. Roger Stone, who is up here in Dallas now at the JFK conference, he'll be speaking tomorrow afternoon, Sunday. And he has been in touch with Donald J. Trump a number of times, as I understand it, in the last week. I think they met personally during this last week. I don't know how long, but they've spoken privately about different things. And so Roger Stone, I'm sure with his experience, has some excellent advice to give to Donald J. Trump, President-elect Donald J. Trump. So I see that is going to be a very positive. Jeff Sessions has been named Attorney General, and there's a Pompeo that's been named to CIA. And so we've already got some people that have already been offered and accepted, as far as I know, some of those. But they still have to be approved by the by the Senate, I mean, to before they're confirmed in the office of those top cabinet. Not all the positions today are Senate confirmation needed. There are many new posts that were created that are not full cabinet positions, but have cabinet-level authority and meetings with the president. So, and those don't absolutely have to have Senate confirmation. But now it looks like the totals will be about 55% U.S. representatives in the House will be Republicans, so they'll control that by 55%. And then the majority in the by the way, those Senate confirmation now only require a majority. So the 52 senators that are presently going to rejoin the government in the House, the U.S. House, will be able to put through any of those confirmations, recommendations by President Trump with only a simple majority. So that's the way that breaks out for the future Trump presidency. Getting back to Trump's liaisons, you could say, with Russia, and his the story that he's going to, with Putin, take out ISIS. Boy, that has enraged the Obama administration and the European Union and NATO. They don't like that at all. And because some of those Middle East countries, Saudi Arabia and Israel and others, France and Germany and the U.S. and so forth, have been behind this as a wedge. To me, I see that they visualized it or conceived of it as a wedge, you know what I mean, technique to take some of these wild groups, to give them a lot of new equipment and to rename them and rebrand them a little bit to where they look like that they're a brand new fighting force, and they'll go in there and start taking out the Syrian government, say. Wesley Clark, a number of years ago, visited the Pentagon, and he came out of there with a plan. He actually recorded it on videotape of a plan to take down 7 countries. And then all of a sudden, several years ago, we had the, several of those governments were beginning to be in just turmoil, you know, in the Middle East. And the Arab Spring started in several of those countries. And now they are actually executing an outright attack on Syria. And I think that President Trump, President-elect Trump now, I think going into the presidency, I think he's going to be a very stabilizing force for the Middle East. And I think this war that the internationalists have been promulgating with Russia, I hope, boy, that is cooling down. And I just hope that just doesn't occur at all. And it looks like that might be, that's our hope, you know. Because I've said this before, is that, this fake news thing. We touched on that earlier. There's a concerted effort through the internet and other means. They're beginning to attack the alternative websites that are publishers and bloggers and so forth and journalists of truth. And they feel like Alex Jones' name has been mentioned on this fake news concept list. There's a fakenewswatch.com that's out there. They have names of like Drudge and all that, and Alex Jones, InfoWars shows up there, and many of the others also. But it's interesting that this one site had MSNBC on there. that's something else, isn't it? So it's a mismatch right now on some of these sites that are even listing these so-called fake news sites. But I don't think that's gonna go over big at all. I don't think that's not gonna succeed, because I think it's too obviously a lie, and it's the transparency of the lie is obvious, and the fact that the mainline media is the propaganda. Much of what they say is very, very sophisticated. They're not going to get up there and tell you outright lies, but they'll mix it in here and there. And so the interpretation will be wrong or off a little bit. And that's how they do it out here in propaganda land, see. So it's not that it's obvious. We've been conditioned by these mainline news programs for decades, if you're of any age at all. I'm 72, so I was just thinking the other day that I have seen from 12 years of age, I've witnessed and been starting to observe the reality of my environment, okay? And it's beginning to come to me that this environment is totally controlled by these so-called media moguls and so forth. There's been a consolidation we all accept as fact now into about five or six media conglomerates, see. And so they begin to parrot one another, whether it's intentional or not. But it seems more intentional than anything at times. But they start parroting each other to a large degree to set policy to a consensus, see, is what they want to float ideas. And then they want to put out the idea out there that we're all going along with this, see. And so that's the way it's done, see. But it's not always that there's a legitimate or a true consensus on any particular topic or issue, but it can be synthesized. You know, I was explaining some of my theories, and I'm going to touch on that lightly here, and then we're going to close down for this first hour tonight. But we live in a field system, okay, and it's made up of electromagnetic radiation, and also we have air that surrounds us. So the air provides a mechanism of transmitting sound. And the field system is a mechanism of being able to transmit light, okay? So when we're talking about any of these mechanisms, whether it's the news or the fake news concept or anything else, or legitimate news that I feel that the alternative press and publications and media is beginning to outdistance themselves way out in front of the mainline media. When we're talking about that, we're talking about ideas bouncing around in this field system, because there are three bodies that I set out in one of my first writings entitled Time Dynamism in 1988. It was actually my second book, but and it was a theory, and it was based on what I call the synergistic, but I called it social synergy back then even. But it was to describe or begin to describe what I call GUR, which is the grand unification of reality, GUR, G-U-R. In my studies in the past, and I'll just briefly explain some of my trials and tribulations, is that I wrote a paragraph at the end of a book about space-time, and I didn't like what I had written there at the end of that book. So I started studying in the year, the spring and summer and fall of 1988. I started going out and delving into space-time. And what is that exactly, see? And so I had the inclination that perspective had something to do with what this small explanation that I ended up giving had to do with. So I went over to the architectural library at the University of Texas, and I looked at perspective and what that was, and the way artists, and of course when you draw a building, an architect has to obey those rules also, and those laws. And it started occurring to me after looking at all these that it obeys the inverse squared law. And the inverse squared law is 1 over r squared, see? And so I began to say, that's, you know, everything does that. And so I went over to the, after I did that, I went back to the university on another day, went over to the engineering library and got more mathematical, calculations that confirmed that inverse square law is solid, see. And then right next door to the engineering library is the astronomy physics library, okay? And so I went over there and it got delved down into this a little deeper. And there's where I begin to see that the force field between quarks is a direct squared basis of force. And outside of the influence of the nucleus, it obeys everything else. The force fields and energy fields obey 1 over r squared, or what they call the inverse squared law. Say. But what's also interesting is that objects decline in size on that same basis. And the intensity of light reflected or emanated also declines on that basis. Gravity obeys that. All other energy fields and forces obey that law. So I begin to think in spherical geometry, see. And that's what I started looking at the formulas for, the volume and surface of spheres and things like that, see. And I came up with just the simple formula, 4 pi r squared, see. And I said, oh, it's got that r squared in it, but it's on top of the equation. It's not on the bottom, see. And so, but then I looked over at the other, 1 over r squared. That was the 1 over r squared. And then I put down right next to it, 4 pi r squared over 1, see. And I said, there's a real relationship here. And so one day I was walking back from the physics library, and I was looking at a retaining wall at the University of Texas, and all of a sudden it hit me. And what I did was I had been talking in my book on time dynamism about the mind being a reality center, okay? And so and at that reality center you have streams of light, and a stream of light I started describing as an idea, okay? So if you have a salt shaker sitting on a table and you're looking at that, then the light reflected from that stream, represents and is transmitted into your mind, okay? Well, the fact of the matter is, the reality is that the salt shaker then sits on the table. But one of the definitions of truth is when the object and the idea coincided and were the same. So the only way that could exist in a physical basis would be for you to take the salt shaker, leave one copy of it on the table, and make an exact replica, and take that salt shaker and put it inside the mind, inside your brain. Then the two objects would be exact replicas of one another, and truth would be physically represented inside the mind and on the table. Would be one salt shaker would be on the table, and one would be physically in your mind. Now, that's not physically possible. So what we have to do through learning process, we have to take that reflection of light, that stream of light, and we have to learn what that is, see. So there begins a memory system of the laying down of previous memory, much like you would with a film. Okay, a strip of film. And so in this book, at the beginnings of it, I invented a new film camera. And what I did basically was I passed the film through the camera at the speed of light. And I said the film was passing through, so every quanta of light energy was recorded on that film. So if you took 1 second, of film out of that camera, you'd have a long, very great distance at the speed of light. So I begin to think in terms like that, and I begin to classify bodies as 3 different bodies, okay? And I was saying, well, there's a sun out there. I would call that an emanating body. I would call an object here. reflecting body. And then I would say that a black hole might be described as a redimensionalizing body, okay? And then I started thinking about a man and his ability to move in this world, see? And so I started talking about objects and bodies that were self-directing, see? And I said to myself, well, man, because he can get up, he has feet, he's mobile, he can walk and change his location. Now, a rock sitting out there in the field is just sitting there, see? And it can't move, so that's what I call a reactive body, see? And so, or an object, see? So I begin to think in a very broad sense of the problem that we have. Now, I'm going to get back to my original point here in just 1 second, okay? And that we exist in a field system. We're inundated by light streams. The light streams represent different ideas. Sometimes the light streams can represent the a light of darkness is what I call it. One of my friends brought me a scripture one time out of Luke, and it described the light of darkness, and I said, what is that? And I began to integrate that into my overall philosophy and worldview. And I began to say, oh, yeah, okay, the light of darkness then is a light stream that is indicative of or descriptive of an airy evil idea or act. See? So I said, well, maybe the mind is infected by these things, and then synergistically these dark streams of light are interacting together to compel us to certain actions, which in some cases, if you're full of dark ideas, you're going to manifest in a very dark, it's going to manifest in actions, very dark and evil actions. And so there's like a sickness, see, that exists. You have some very beautiful ideas of love, forgiveness, kindness, respect for your fellow man, respect for women, respect for everyone. And men should respect women in the right way, see. And men have fallen away from that, see. And they're treating women like whores, and they shouldn't do that. That is not right. There's all kinds of rap music that denigrates women. And women are very important to this world. They're life givers and nurturers, and they must be respected. And I come from the old school, and we respected women. We held doors open for women, and we catered to women, and we were good to women. We were good to our mothers, and we were certainly good to our girlfriends and our future wives. So we've got to try to overcome this. We come down to a very simple concept of forgiveness. See, so. How does we come into the world? We're inundated by all of these different influences, but how then do we get out of this? I believe that simply we come into the world, and a process of the conditioning begins, and the parents begin to induce into us a worldly system and view that they are subjects to, have been subjected to, and are also victims of. See. And in that worldly view, they just induce that into us unknowingly, unwittingly, see. But they don't mean to do that, okay? But they do that, see. And that's sort of how the world works in the wrong way, see. But if you stumble onto some of these teachings about forgiveness and so forth, then I believe that it is the path to release, because I believe in this processing, you could say, the process that takes place of being conditioned into worldly things then creates, I believe, a split off from the real core self. And I believe what's created is a false self, an ego-based false self. And I think that false self then begins to be the idea that we are associated with who we think we are, see. But who we think we are is of a false self, and it could be inflated. And there's a lot of different personalities here that we're talking about. But overall, I'm talking in a very general way. So we begin to associate with this so-called false self, but the false self continues to thrive and continues its existence by hate and resentment. and puffing of itself, see, in some grandiose delusion of grandeur. Now, delusions of grandeur, yes, that's what we thrive in. We are deluded because the false self is continually deluded by abstractions of self that are false or unreal or lies. So we begin to deceive ourselves, say, self-deception. And that gets back to a cognitive, you could say, biases. There are lists that you can find. Go in, you know, order my book if you want to, Be Good to Yourself. Or go into to Wikipedia and put in there cognitive biases and see how many ways that we as human beings have of tricking ourselves into some kind of a false self, deluded state. And that's what we're doing right now in this problem of the newly election, see, of a new president, see, is that we're beginning to delude ourselves and continue to feed all that hate and resentment of the false self. And this is what we must guard against. Trump spoke some very, very important words about what's wrong with this country. And he says, drain the swamp. He talked about corruption. He hit nerves out there. Many people in outlying areas in America, they got up for the first time, some of them, and they said, the man is telling the truth about the corruption. And I'm looking over here at his opponent, and they've got WikiLeaks that are all over the place of great pay-for-play out of the State Department and other things. And the guy, to me, is talking about what's wrong with America, but not only America, but the world. But he said he didn't leave himself out. One thing about Trump, he said, I used to be an insider. He's trying to escape out of that and establish a legacy that I believe will survive him whenever he's passed and gone, see. And that's really the key to Trump's psychology, is that, yes, he's hustled in the past. He's branded this, the Trump Tower, the Trump brand, whatever, hotels, and all this other stuff that he's made a lot of fortune. So he's learned how to manipulate people, how to use big planes to sell people on his franchise or whatever, his brand. Okay? But here at the end of his life, he wants to make it more meaningful than ever before. So he's trying very hard to put forward something that matters. And I believe he's finally realized that when he was willing and dealing, he was helping to break up America and not make it what it should be. And I think he's had a change of heart. In biblical terms, you might call that a metanoia or a change of direction, see. That's what the good book spells. But in psychological terms, you might say that they had a cathexis. They woke up, see. A catharsis occurred of, oh my gosh, I was that way and I'm going to stop being that way. But we can all begin to forgive ourselves and others, and we all have the ability to do that. So the advice here at the end of this first hour is, be good to yourself and others, love, achieve, and create beauty, forgiving always. And that's what my book, Be Good to Yourself, says. And it will build a better America. It will build better citizens. It will regain respect that men should have for women. And it will provide the opportunity for women also and the love that good women deserve. Thank you for listening. Good night.